finished up last week. We were talking about some of the Herodians and the Samaritans, and when we got finished, that gave us a really good kind of a, I guess, brief history of a lot of the political and spiritual influences that we saw over the Jews and over their times. I know we won't remember all the dates. I know we won't remember the names. We can't even pronounce them. But I know after I went through the study, I had a lot better feel for what all they had been through when I got finished with it, when I saw all the powers that God had used, that He had orchestrated His providence through, and the effects that it had upon them. You kind of understood better when you got into the New Testament and saw some of the sects, some of the changes that had taken place in the Jewish life or culture. It gives you a little better understanding of how that came about. As we said before, God recorded for us before, and He recorded for us after, and He gave us a lot of prophecy into that 400 years. So it's not like we were left without anything. We were given a whole lot when we sit down and we get to studying. Those spiritual and political influences that you see on that Jewish culture as these powers came into being, all these things we got to keep in mind were more or less self-inflicted. We know the Jews from the very beginning had their problems. They fell away from God. They would come back. All these things, God still played out His providence and His plan of salvation that was coming in spite of them. When we finished up last week, we were looking at that that Hasmonean dynasty that we were talking about, that Maccabean history dynasty, as it played out at the end in the turmoil that was going on. We made note that those 800 Pharisees, according to man's history, were put to death in front of these Sadducees that had played these political powers back and forth. And we began to see some of the reason that there was so much turmoil between these sects. There were actually five sects of the Jewish faith there that's were given quite a bit of information about it. And also there's besides the sects, there was a professional group, which was the scribes, that were mentioned quite a bit about, that's good to look back and get a little bit on. So we've just got a few more classes, so let's spend the rest of the time looking at these sects that have developed within the Jewish faith and the changes that took place with them as well. A little background. The rise of these Jewish sects developed a lot in part from these influences of these other countries, especially as we went through that Greek influence. When Alexander the Great comes in, he puts all this under one power and then he leaves and these four generals split up. Their intent was not only to divide, to conquer, and to take power of us, but their intent was to change the world, convert the world to this Hellenistic or Greek culture or way of life. And we see when we get to looking at these sects, that really influenced these sects a whole lot, because you watch them align themselves with them and you see why they end up where they do later on. This Hellenism spread its influence. We mainly spent our time on Ptolemy and the Seleucid, which was the two generals that fought over the area and over the Jewish country there that we looked at. But these Jews couldn't escape it. They couldn't escape from conforming to it. It was forced on them. But many of the Jews were willing to kind of blend with this Greek culture. They were willing to blend this way of Greek way of life with a Jewish faith. It's Judaism. They are later, they're described or developed. They're the Sadducees. And we see why the Sadducees benefited so much more politically as far as political powers and positions than the Pharisees did, because they were willing to hook their wagon to the powers that were at the time. You see a lot of that in these Jewish settlements. It was really like Alexandria, you know, which was a great Greek export city there in Egypt, and a lot of these Hellenistic centers. But there was also the Jews that felt adopting this Greek lifestyle and these changes that they took, was unfaithful. They were not being loyal to their Jewish backgrounds, and they resisted that. They weren't going to adopt this Grecian way of life. They developed more into the Pharisees sect that we know of, because the Pharisees were more legalistic. They were more orthodox. They were considered purists or pious to the Jewish faith. They were more, we would call them conservative today. If you looked at the way America is today, conservatives and liberals, you would see the Pharisees as a very conservative group, as opposed to the Sadducees, who had the open mind and were willing to accept other culture, other ways of life. We would see them more as a liberal type group. I think if you look back, if you remember when we finished with those, that I guess it shocked my conscience anyway, when this Maccabean or Hasmonean dynasty is playing out, and they have this great showdown between the Sadducees, who align themselves with the Maccabean or the Hasmonean dynasty ruler, and the Pharisees that sided with Syria originally. We saw that those Pharisees were put to death in front of these Sadducees, but that's back in that Hasmonean time or Maccabean revolt. And we see that during that time, it shows more like the Pharisees with their conservative attitude. You see them aligned, only interested in religion, only interested in their religious liberty. That's where their priority is. So we see that in the Pharisees. They weren't concerned about politics. They were strictly worried about religion. So they saw this blending with the Greeks as something that was bad. Whereas the Sadducees, that were willing to adopt these cultures and these new ways of life, were in a position to acquire more political influence and more power. So you see their, the polarizing of each other, of the dividing the more and more between the two sects of these Jews, as far as the two largest ones were. The Pharisees, to go in a little more depth about them, were the most numerable. That was the biggest sect that there was. Probably one of the most influential, too, as far as the Jewish sects go, because they were more religious-oriented, more about the Jewish faith. To give you an idea about how many that there were, they numbered about 6,000 at the time of Herod the Great. So they were a pretty good little sect within the Jewish nation. We mentioned them a while back, and the reason I reemphasize it, because I know I don't remember dates and names that well all the time. We first hear about their roots or their beginnings about 104 to 134 B.C. before Christ. That was when that Hasmonean or Maccabean dynasty time was dying out before the Romans came in or took complete control. So these Pharisees represented kind of a combination of high priest and civil authority over the Jewish nation. The term Pharisee means separated ones. There's a couple of different ideas of why that's applied. Number one, they were considered pious. They were considered purists. when it came to the Jewish faith. So it separated them in a sense. And also, they were separated in a sense that they denounced, resisted, separated themselves from this Greek or Hellenistic influence that the Sadducees and so many others had bought into. Josephus, one of our historians that we often refer to, he mentions that they appeared more religious than others and seemed to interpret the laws more accurately. They were a scholarly class dedicated to teaching the law, the Jewish law, which was written and oral. The priests were very active in the oral part of the law. The Pharisees were all about the dissemination of the Jewish faith into the world and what changes that it was going to bring in the future, because they had prophecy of that and they believed in the resurrection of the dead. You don't see them mentioned, as we said before in the very beginning of our study, in the Hebrew Scriptures. You know, there's something that came along. That's why we've studied our history up to now, to see where they came and why they came. But they taught a lot of laws and doctrines that weren't set down necessarily in those Scriptures, the old Hebrew Scriptures, because of the oral law and the other things that had evolved within the Jewish faith. Some of the things that the doctrine covered, they promised salvation to an individual in a life that was beyond the grave. That was something that wasn't formulated or brought up in the Pentateuch. Yet these Pharisees were really successful in winning over people to their what they considered innovational teachings at that time that Jesus came in. And the reason that we know that is because in Matthew, Jesus Christ makes a comment to them that they sat in the chair of Moses. So he recognizes that, and so did the Jews. To top their characteristics, they accepted the entire canon of the Old Testament, laws, prophets, and the writings. They attached great importance to the oral law, or the tradition of the Jews. They believed in the existence of angels and spirits and the resurrection of the body and the immortality of the soul. Why do we bring that out? Because we're going to see the next sect that did not believe that. But they believed in that. They practiced ritual prayer, fasting, tithing of their properties. You see, in this time, a lot of the old Orthodox Jewish Mosaic law had filtered down. It came with them. They hadn't completely given up. They weren't so completely deluded that no similitude existed of the old law. They kept the Sabbath strictly. As a matter of fact, some of the points that were noted of how strict they kept this Sabbath was some interesting things. As they forbade spitting on the bare ground on the Sabbath, lest it be considered plowing or work. A woman was not to look in the mirror on the Sabbath, lest she see a gray hair, be tempted to pluck it up. And some questioned whether they could eat an egg laid on a festival day. It might be tainted, even though the hen was unaware of the festival day. But we see and get an idea of how these Pharisees were the old Orthodox. They were strict. They were to these things, because we're going to contrast them here in a minute. Many of them were considered fanatical. They took on this self-righteous air that was really, really abrasive to Jesus Christ. You know, Jesus often really rebuked them for that because of their self-righteous attitude that they had. But they had their flaws. They developed legal loopholes for their convenience. Some of the things that I saw noted when it comes to legal loopholes that they created. One was that you couldn't carry your clothes out of a burning house on the Sabbath, but you could put on several layers of clothing and wear them out of the house. Just a loophole to help to get your stuff out, I guess. Travel on the Sabbath, of course, was limited to 3/5 of a mile from the town where one lived. But on Friday, you could take food to a house 3/5 of a mile from home and go there on the Sabbath. This was considered a home away from home, so you could get another 3/5 of a mile to go. So we see where even though they were self-righteous and they were very, very pious in some respects, we know from their history that they had problems of their own. Their influence, they were in control of the synagogue instruction. It was important to them because they weren't worried so much about the political. And of all the sects of the Jews, they were the only one that survived because it's considered today that this old Orthodox, modern Orthodox Judaism is from that Pharisee sect, or the root is from that Pharisee sect. So they're really, I guess, considered, if you accept that, it's probably the only sect that there's anything that remains today from. Let's contrast or compare them to the Sadducees, because those were the two greatest groups. The Sadducees, their names derived from the sons of Zadok, high priest in the time of David and Solomon. And it means righteous ones. It don't mean they originated them, but that's where the names derived from. They were less numerous than the Pharisees. They were more of a party for common people, whereas the Pharisees were more lawyers type. They were more of a considered a party of the common people. After the return of the Babylonian exile that we recapped on our history, when they came back, the high priesthood, we noticed when we studied that, took on more and more of a political role as opposed to that the high priest Judaism position. We see it take on more and more political power. In the time of Jesus, we know they had a whole lot of political power. And these Sadducees possessed a lot of that influence in those positions within those political positions at that time. And they often compromised because of cultures. We know they did with the Greeks. That's where they got their start, more or less. They compromised their cultures that were different in their ways of life than the Jews were. They wielded more political power because they controlled this priesthood, which had become more political as opposed to religious. Some of the characteristics: they held to a literal interpretation of the law of the Pentateuch, the first five books, and held to it alone. So they were greatly limited, I guess, as compared to the Pharisees, which considered written, oral, tradition. Pharisees were kind of over all of it. Where the Sadducees limited themselves to that first five books, the Pentateuch or the Torah. And I've often thought about that. The more, I guess, you could limit yourself where none of this existed before, the more it would open you up to free yourself to be able to buy into these other cultures and this other stuff. Because the more you go, the more you're going to have to adhere to. So they held to a literal interpretation of the law, just those first five. They denied the existence of angels, spirits. They didn't believe in the resurrection of the body or the immortality of the soul. That's a big contrast, isn't it, with the Pharisees? There again, political versus religious. The Pharisees saw the prophecy. They knew the law. They knew what was coming. They thought they knew what was coming. Whereas the Sadducees, they didn't buy into any of this. They were mostly bound up in the ritual aspects and acting out of the Jewish faith. It wasn't so much more of a driving force for them, other than the fact they went through the acts. They crossed their T's and dotted their I's as far as their acts go. But they were more involved in the political side of it. I saw a thing here while I was looking at these notes that sums it up best. You go back to our history that we talked about earlier with them and the rise and the fall of the powers that were within this time of between the Testaments. And you see that the best term to sum them up were they were political opportunists. They limited themselves as far as religion went, and they hooked themselves to every political cart that was in the front. So that's why they were exerted a lot of political influence, because they were in political positions. They were looked at more than that. Their influence on the ministry of Christ, because we see a whole lot of our scripture of Christ and of the early church. They opposed Christ. They opposed this gospel. The Sadducees did, for a different reason than the Pharisees. And that helps us understand when we see this thing, when we look at where they come from and what they do, it helps us more understand what they're about. The Pharisees resisted Christ and the church because of religious strictness to the Jewish faith. They were unwilling to accept Christ. They were unwilling to accept salvation. Whereas the Sadducees were unwilling to accept Jesus Christ or salvation because of Rome. They didn't want to offend Rome. That was not politically correct at that time. They were more interested in that because, after all, remember, they didn't believe in a life after death. They didn't believe in angels. They didn't believe in a resurrection. So you see, now it helped me so much by going back through this that now when we go into the New Testament after these 400 years of silence and we see these Pharisees and Sadducees, we get a little better idea of why they were what they were, what they believed in and what they didn't, and you understand a little bit more about them. That's who the Sadducees in Acts 4, Peter and John were brought before the council there in Acts chapter 4. But the Sadducees, like anything else that hooks its wagon to man, teams up with man, it had its end that came. And with this destruction of the temple and the destruction of Jerusalem that comes in 70 A.D., which is what we've worked up to in all of our study, they've got nothing any longer to be in existence for. Their political business is gone and done, so they're of no use. So that's about the end of the Sadducees. Let's talk about three other little sects, but they were small. The Essenes, E-S-S-E-N-E-S, Essenes. There's not a lot known about that Jewish sect as far as their origin goes. The Dead Sea Scrolls gave some insight into this group, or at least this term. They had Essene communities, and in those communities, from you all who study history and know a lot about Jewish history and whatnot, Josephus describes them quite well in his writings on the War of the Jews. Josephus recorded a lot of history about these Jewish problems. This word Essenes, the name, is generally thought to have come from the Greek word H-O-S-I-O-S, meaning holy. It's likely that they were an offshoot of this Pharisee sect, doctrinally anyway. They were very similar to the Pharisee sect. Some writings that later on in 1946, W.F. Albright, and even recently, Murphy O'Connor had some studies and writings that suggested that these Essenes were Jews who returned from Babylon just prior to that Maccabean revolt or time. And that's where their beginnings were, 152 to 143 B.C. The characteristics of these Essenes, they were very severely self-disciplined and practiced abstinence from things to great, great degree. They abstained from marriage. They lived in seclusion and secluded communities, had all things in common. Their lives were simple. They were restrained and sober and rejected all oaths. But like the Pharisees, they believed in the immortality of the soul, either in a place of comfort or a place of torment. They're never mentioned in the gospel. So there is no record of them before or after this period of time. This is in the writings of men and in the writings of the Jews, some of the Jewish records of this group. Could be that they were so withdrawn from society and secluded that, you know, they were never mentioned or known unless you were part of them. But according to the historians Philo and Josephus, they thought that there was about 4,000 of them at one time. We've heard of the Zealots. We've read about the Zealots. They first appeared in Palestine in this period of time as well. It's the reason they show up in the New Testament. We know nothing about them from the Old. They appeared in Palestine during the early years of Roman rule under that Judas that we studied about, the son of Ezekias. They think also that they were originally Pharisees, split off them, who became interested, I guess, in political freedom to get away from any kind of oversight at all upon themselves. There are some recollections or some writings of historians, Josephus being one, that the Zealots were formed in A.D. 6, right after the birth of Christ, when Judas the Galilean and Zadok the Pharisee rebelled against Rome. So they were very, you know, relatively young. Their characteristics: they advocated the violent overthrow of Rome. They were very instrumental in that. They refused to pay taxes to Rome. They regarded acknowledgement of loyalty to Caesar as a sin. Their nationalism was related to their faith. Many of them had been Galileans, may have been Galileans, because some of the history from Gamaliel that we read about also in the New Testament confused Peter and John as being zealots. But they were very aggressive. They won the bulk of the people that they influenced to their cause because they incited revolt. Of course, from our blanket study that we just finished, we know that during that time period, with all this revolt and all the oppression that the Jews had suffered, that's what built up and built up and built up until Rome, just as they had done, just as the Zealots have done, outright revolt against the Romans. The Romans step in, say, "That's enough of the unrest. We're going to take care of this." And they squash it out. They destroy Jerusalem, destroy the temple in 70 A.D. You might remember Simon was a disciple. He was referred to as the Zealot. Luke 6:15, Acts 1:13, and in Mark 3:18. Now, in Mark 3:18, in some versions, he's referred to as Simon the Canaanite, but that was an Aramaic phrase that was used for zealot. So we see there where Simon was referred to as a zealot. We remember our study about the Herods, the Herodians. That was the fifth or sixth, the last one. They were a minority of influential Jews who were wholly and totally politically minded. And we know why, don't we? Because we know where the Herodians came from. They helped get the Herods in place. They were Roman. They were attached to them politically. They pushed for their success. These Herodians were described as the Sadducean aristocracy of priests who supported the Herodian dynasty, and by implication, the Roman rule, which had put these Herods in power that had came in the governorships. So that's the five sects, at least the ones that we're concerned with, the only ones that I found. But that covered a whole lot, and it touched on all the history that we spent our quarter laying to find out where these sects, where these things came from. The professional group that we talked about was the scribes. They're mentioned quite a bit. They weren't a religious or a political group, but they were a professional group according to the studies that I've seen. Some of terms that might be synonymous with them were lawyer, scribe, teacher of the law, or teacher. You might see that used in the New Testament, referred to them. Some other names that they were called, rabbis, literally, my great one, or my master teacher. We see the origin of the scribe, not as a sect now, but as this political or this professional group. We see it mentioned as early as in Ezra. Because if we look at Ezra 7, verse 12. It's talking here of Ezra and Artaxerxes' letter that he gave Ezra the priest. Verse 12 of chapter 7 of Ezra. Says to Ezra the priest, a scribe of the law of the God of heaven. So he was referred to here as a scribe in Ezra 7 verse 12. Nehemiah 8 verses 8 and 9 also refer to that as scribe. Most of the scribes at this time were identified with the Pharisees at the time of Christ, and we can understand why. They were the more religious oriented sect of the Jews. These scribes were regarded as authoritative interpreters of the law. They had to be an expert in all the law, written, oral, traditional, and they would often be the ones that were employed to stand before the people or the leaders and give them what we would call today the legal advice or explanation of the law, of what needed to be done. They'd cite it to them, give them their interpretations. They knew the history of the fathers, the Jewish fathers, and those that came before, so that they could give them a good, well-rounded advice on the problems that they sought. I don't know about you, but when it comes to the sects and to the Jewish people, by the time you've got this far in your study, you see, man, they're a scrambled mess because of their infidelity and because of their failure to be faithful to God. The worldly influences, the corruption from within, political and spiritual both. We see the sects split and divide. We see where they come from. And we see that that they're just an absolute mess. But through it all, God plays out His providence. God has primed the world to bring Jesus Christ into it, to bring salvation into it. And all the prophecy that we mentioned before is still there for them to see. All this is still in light. It's not like God left them without. They were completely aware of everything. They came back from their exile. They tried to reestablish. They went through all this problem still. Christ is ready to come into the world. Has anybody got any questions? I doubt I could answer them, but I'd be glad to try. Thank you.